Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast, the Scotland Pumping English Annual Tradition Edition. Morning after the Calcutta Cup, Scotland are 1-1 and the Grand Slam dream is on. It is David, Matt and Alan, the posh boys with their pompous memes back to have a chat about everything that went on yesterday down at Twickenham and look forward to Scotland marching on against Wales next weekend. Matt, how are you feeling after it?
Yeah, I mean, if pompous memes translates into, you know, record-breaking levels of engagement, then that's just the way we've got to go. I've been devouring every little bit of post-Calcutta Cup analysis today, and it's just been a really, really great way to spend a Sunday, to be honest.
It is so good. I will watch a video of Richie Gray passing the ball. Easily up over 100 times I've watched that gif of his beautiful give and go. Alan, you just told us off air that you were ignoring your child screaming last night, looking at memes online.
Look, sometimes you need to prioritize, and just the volume and quality of memes and reels floating around between around 7 p.m. and 8 p.m. last night was fantastic, and therefore my child had to wait, and it was worth it.
It absolutely was. I mean, at some stage, though, do you think there's a chance we will get bored of beating England in the Calcutta Cup?
It's an interesting one. Even when England went 2012 up, I still felt like Scotland were going to come back into it. And I think against like Ireland and France, if they'd gone 2012 up at home, I would have been pretty resigned. But it's the way that sort of shift in how I think Scotland fans sort of look at England rugby now. And actually, we have managed to get over that mental barrier a little bit that definitely plagued Scotland in the sort of early to middle 2010s.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're also just better at rugby than we were in the early to middle 2010s.
Yeah.
There was definitely a mental barrier, but the vast majority of it was quality.
Also a massive physical barrier.
Yeah. Well, you can check out a lot of our memes, and we've been resharing, as Alan says, absolutely everything from the Scottish Rugby online community on our Twitter. That is at Thistle Rugby Pod. On Instagram, Thistle_Rugby_Pod. It's just all good stuff. It's great days when everybody comes together like that. You've got Mark Bonner, you've got all the celebs coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah, I love that.
That was probably the best celeb reaction.
His face is just, it's too good. Have me in stitches.
We are all Mark. I mean, I don't really know where to start. I mean, I think I've read every column. I've looked at every single player rating today. But Alan, this is one, you and I watched it together on one of our, again, sort of big days out without Matt that are becoming quite a habit at the moment. We talked about it a little bit. Were Scotland actually good in beating England yesterday?
I don't think so. I think both teams were broadly quite average. And I think actually, up until about the 70th minute, I think England were slightly better than Scotland. And I think actually, it was a bit of a sort of manifestation of probably Finn on Scotland's side and then Smith and Farrell on England's side, where both were sort of blowing quite hot and cold throughout that whole match. And it was an interesting one because I think the way what Scotland did is they sort of hung in there. You can see with the number of tackles they were putting in and the tackle success rate, they were getting absolutely battered. And at the same time, we were just pretty ruthless in terms of the chances that we had. Probably out of the five chances, we got four tries, which is an extremely un-Scottish thing to do. So I think what you're seeing there is an average performance where you had a Scotland team, specifically a pack, that was able just to keep Scotland in the match. And in the end, we were better at putting away our chances.
Matt, good performance, average performance?
Yeah, I mean, it depends how you sort of define it, like a good or an average performance. If you define it as like winning the key moments and as you said Alan, like being ruthless when it counts, then it was pretty good. And I think there was some stats that would I think they were on Rugby Pass earlier around like the amount of visits and time that Scotland had in the England 22 was very little compared to England's in the Scotland 22, but the points differential was, I think they scored twice as many points per visit to the 22. Those are, you know, the key stats that like define games. But then I think you look at it as a whole and there's definitely a lot of areas to improve on. It was just, I thought Scotland were a bit inconsistent. Like some of the launch plays from the line out for the first try, for instance, was like executed 100% accuracy. And then the next few were sort of fumbled around a little bit. I felt like our defensive points, you know, the tackle success rate was mental. Well over 90% with like 250 tackles made. But then at some points we were actually quite soft in defense, I thought, and England didn't actually have to work like too hard for their tries. So it was a bit of a mixed bag.
Times when really. England were getting like unbelievable amounts of absolutely rapid ball.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seemed as if Scotland couldn't really do that much about it to slow it down. I think if you look at the tries, I'd be a bit more worried if every single try was purely like a Doohan, or even a Ben White's try was arguably a little bit on the fortunate side. But I think the fact that we still managed to score two of our tries through more sort of concerted pressure, more team play, means that I'm sort of a bit more positive overall.
There was a stat that went up just at the end of the first half where I think me and Dave were looking at it, and it's about 55% of England's rucks were sort of sub 3 seconds versus about 20% of Scotland's. And it did feel, I think, at the back end of that first half, I was getting a little bit worried because, to your point, I think England was starting to make quite a lot of easy yards. Scotland was still making those tackles, but England were definitely making yards after contact. And then obviously to go from being about 12-5 up to then very quickly going to 13-12, we sort of went into that, into half time very much on the back foot. So it was, ultimately great that Scotland team, both from sort of a fitness standpoint, but then also from sort of a game management standpoint, were able to sort of come back and really sort of turn around potentially some of those issues, especially over the speed of England's ball, but then also looking at that last try, just how quick Scotland were able to kind of get some of the ball in the second half.
I mean, looking at the Scotland performances sort of 1 to 15, you've got to sort of say, I know a lot of people are commenting that Tooney sort of got all of the big decisions right. I mean, Matt, are you giving up for Tooney for getting everything correct?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that Hugh Jones had a really good game overall. I think maybe
it.
Like...
Loves playing at Twickenham.
Yeah, exactly. His scoring rate against England is sort of... I was a bit worried that everyone was pulling up videos from 2017 and 2018, and I was thinking, you know, that's actually quite a long time ago, and what are the chances he's going to replicate it? But when he had chances, he was dangerous. The other big calls, Steyn maybe wasn't that big a call, but I thought he actually had a really solid game in the end. Ben White was another one who seems to absolutely love playing against England. And even we'll talk about the bench, but like Horn coming on was pretty class. So Price must be looking, you know, sat there with his rabbit a bit gutted. And then I thought Crosby was you know, put in a lot of work, a lot of tackles in the end, which maybe it was hard to fully notice how much work rate he put in. And Nell and Bergen, I thought, were like actually far better than I'd expected. Nell scrummaged really well, and I thought Bergen had a pretty good shift around the park. So yeah, you've got to give him quite a lot of credit, I think.
Alan, your campaign against Chris Harris vindicated?
No, I wouldn't put it like that. I think Hugh Jones was a better man for the task that was needed. And I think ultimately there is argument suggests that in other games you might want to bring on someone like a Harris, especially against maybe someone like a France, right, when you're up against someone like a Fiku, who's just so dangerous. But no, I think the only other one, and it's maybe not a massive call, but you know, George Turner hasn't played well this year for Glasgow, or he's been a bit average.
He's barely played, really.
Barely played. I think arguably, you know, he's not first choice at Glasgow. If anything, Johnny Matthews is first choice. Yeah. I heard of Fraser Brown and George Turner, and you know, George Turner, I think objectively he has some issues with throwing in, but fair play to him. Both in this match and 2 years ago at Twickenham, he's been absolutely fantastic at the set piece. And then on top of that, we all know how dynamic he is. I mean, some of the ways he throws his body around, I know I think he technically would have missed the tackle, but there was a hit he sort of tried to put in on Ellis Genge, and he just has no sort of care for his own body. And I thought just generally getting around the park, he was really fantastic for the 60 minutes. And then Fraser Brown coming on as well, just again, not had that much game time, but sort of carried over that form from New Zealand, where he was just sort of on point and did everything that he needed to do well.
Obviously, the man who gets, the most common column inches written about him in Scottish rugby, Finn, unbelievable photo. Firstly, let's start with the photo of him going around, the celebration photo. Absolutely incredible stuff. But I mean, again, I don't think he played that well, but I suppose when he needed to, namely that sort of last 10 minutes, he really sort of came into his own. The first half in particular, it was aimless kicking, a few things that didn't quite come off that put us under pressure, and it certainly wasn't a classic Finn performance. But you know, you look at that final try, he had four very high quality touches driving the team around the field, and it's a funny one with him, Matt.
Yeah, I think I saw there were some stats in the week about, it's quite brutal stats to pull up, but like most turned over players was one of them in the Six Nations in recent years. And he wasn't actually top, but I think he was the top standoff who had a few more starts, a certain amount of starts. And that's not that surprising given the way he plays, particularly compared to, in contrast to, you know, a Farrell, for instance. But I was just looking at the stats. He was turned over four times at the weekend. Some of which were in like reasonably promising positions. And it just felt as if his kicking game was a little bit off as well. And I get that obviously his role in, I think, the first try and the last try was absolutely pivotal. And those are the big moments that, you know, won us the game in the end. But it does feel as if we should expect a little bit more from him. And I know that people kind of say, well, that's what he's like, he blows hot and cold, etc. But I think he would have looked at that and been probably thought, I could actually have played a lot better. I think that's actually a reasonable point.
Agreed. And I think it's interesting looking at those two tries that you sort of picked out. I think that first try, you know, not only does he sort of make the pass to Sione, but actually just him as a character and his style of play almost like force sucks Farrell in to like make that space for Sione, and ultimately Russell's good enough to be able to see that happening and sort of pop it to Sione. And then for that second try, it's when Scotland were able to get a bit of front foot ball, and they were able to get exceedingly quick ball, and he's on the front foot, he's just, you know, the one of, if not the best 10 in the world, right? He's just kind of got, he, that whole period of time, he seemed to sort of have the game kind of in his hands, and he was able to sort of dictate where everything was going. And I think actually, you know, one of the reasons why I didn't have a good game is ultimately they just didn't have enough. There wasn't enough moments where Scotland were able to get A, that quick ball, and B, that go forward. And for all his, you know, positives and greatness, he has been a player that has struggled to sometimes turn things around when he's not getting that right. But you're right, you know, not to blow my own trumpet, but what I said on Thursday was, or Friday, was that if the game's tight, sort of back, I think I said Finn and Hogg, to sort of see out this type of game against England, it feels like they both kind of rise and are able to sort of make the right plays in the decisive moments. And ultimately, that's kind of what Finn managed to do, right? He made the right play at the right time in the really key moment. And ultimately, that was sort of the difference at the end. So fair play to Finn and me, is what I would say.
Yeah, I often say you don't get enough credit from Scottish rugby, Alan.
Yeah, for Finn's performances.
Yeah.
I mean, Matt, what did you make of his sort of, so much has been written and sort of talked about his long-standing halfback partnership with Ali Price. Ali Price, obviously, a little bit out of form. Ben White, sort of grabbing that number nine jersey, looking like he's going to be the incumbent sort of for the rest of the year at this rate.
Yeah, well, I think he's probably best known for his performances against England in the last year, the last two years, those two tries that he scored. But I actually just think his like basics are really, really good. I think his box kicking is, maybe with a few exceptions in the game, is pretty on point. I thought he actually kicked a lot better than Van Port felt on the day. And it just seems as if like he manages to find a way to score against England in these big games. And he kind of reminds me of like a bit of like a Price maybe 3 or 4 years ago, who was a bit more willing to have a go, I suppose. So it's funny to think that England clearly, because I think he captained England under 20s, but clearly it decided, nah, he's not the one for us. But he's been doing the business for quite a while now for Scotland.
And on his outside shoulder, Tuipulotu, I mean, I think it's safe to say this sort of, it was a gradual rise at first, but now Sione's probably got his name sort of stamped on that starting team sheet as well, Alan.
Yeah, 100%. I think he has, you know, he has the ability to truck it up, and ultimately he's a big old boy. Although, was it Freddie Stewart that ended him? He just got in the wrong position.
Yeah, that was horrible.
You've got to be gutted about how many times that's being played in slow motion across your social media feed at the moment.
It's just when you're sort of balanced on the heels and someone just like, you just get kind of crouched down.
It's so unlucky. Like, he's just in a bad position.
100%. But Luke, I think, and then in attack, in open play, didn't have that many sort of like chances with the ball. But ultimately, when he did, I think he made a lot of the right decisions. And that grubber, I'm not going to lie, when he came over, I think first year, I don't think he was putting in many kicks. This feels like a sort of, you know, 6 months to 9 months thing where he just sort of like brought this into his game. And it's amazing, actually, sort of like how many tries or chances have been created for Glasgow and now Scotland with that quite sort of like subtle left boot of his.
It's a bit of a toe poke, I think. But in a good way, like, it's obviously really skillful, but it's sort of, there's not that much movement in the leg. It's like jab through.
Pete Long was in the Times on yesterday morning talking up, or maybe it's Friday morning, talking up Sione's kicking game. And I was like, really? But then there you go. Pete Horn knows more than I do.
Pete Horn's coming in replacing Zondag. You know, the results are immediate.
Pete Horn, one from one.
Yeah.
But no, I think you're right in the sense that, you know, if we're going to have a centre pairing, I think, looking back 12 months ago, it's 18 months ago, Sione, you know, wouldn't have been sort of sixth or seventh probably in the queue. And now the conversation really feels like it is who is partnering Sione, either with him at 12 with Harris, Jones, or Bennett even, or him at 13 with Redpath. That's kind of where it is. And I feel like he seems to work relatively well with sort of Russell, and obviously this Jones pairing has sort of been doing well for Glasgow and sort of shifted through into the Scotland setup. So I think that's sort of actually that 10, 12, 13 combo is probably the most from an attacking standpoint, and probably the most I've been sort of happy with over the last, at least the last sort of 12 months. So I'm keen to sort of definitely sort of keep that moving forward against Wales.
It's got a really good balance, I think, because Tupulotu obviously can carry pretty well, but his little pullbacks, I thought through the game when he did get the chance, are a nice little weapon. And I think he manages to disguise it pretty well. And probably even in that situation, in for the Hugh Jones try, you saw Russell looping behind Jones as if he was going to get one of those pullback passes. So I think, you know, he's pretty good at keeping the defence guessing. And he's also very solid defensively too, Pulutu as well. So he had a bit of a blinder, I thought.
Doesn't he have a little brother? Where's this boy?
He does.
Yeah.
Where's this guy?
I think he's in the Waratahs squad. Shit, he's young though.
What 19. Position was he again?
But yeah, I mean, we've seen enough now. We've seen enough of the gene pool.
Japan scout. That Japan scout is just getting like another like bonus directly from Dodson, just like into his personal bank account. It's absolute find.
We need to find out who the Japan scout was. I don't think the position exists anymore. I think they've retired. They're just like, I don't need any more money. I've made my Tuipulotu money.
I think it's I think it was similar to what sort of Cammy Mather's role is, where you're not in New Zealand, or it was, where you're not like a full time employee, right? But it's like ultimately just you get paid
to go
on the weekends and just sort of like check out a few players that have said they've got like a Scottish mum or granny.
But
still he needs to be called out.
Moses Tuipulotu is 20, centre in the Waratahs squad. There you go.
Loving it.
Moses, I'm in. I mean, just working down the back line, let's do Doohan in a second. I want to focus a little bit on Hoggy, though, because we touched on Alan. You know, Finn obviously coming good with a massive play there towards the end and through the game in the big moments. Hogg, relatively subdued throughout the whole match, and then, you know, unsure of whether it was injury or tactical, but, you know, certainly wasn't happy when he was substituted. You know, a little bit off the boil, a little bit rusty coming back from injury.
Definitely a little bit off the boil. And I'm sure part of that is ultimately he hasn't played that much rugby in the last sort of month or so.
Yeah.
Now, whether he was injured or not, I think it's fair to say that if anyone was going to be taken off in that back three, I think ultimately it had to be Hogg based on form and sort of impact on the match. You know, ultimately he clearly brings a lot and he's clearly like a key leader. But I think, you know, Doohan and Steyn both looked really dangerous. And actually, I think it was a great call. You know, King Horn, when he came on, really did actually make an impact from that 15 position.
You'd think he should play in the back three or something. Just make him the fullback, the backup fullback to Hoggy.
If he can't
make so much sense,
because Sione's there, then 15 is his second best position.
There you go. Yeah, I thought Hogg had, like, he just didn't really do that much. I thought, but didn't have like a terrible game. And it's even in, I think nowadays his game isn't necessarily about those like big blockbuster runs, but particularly against England in recent years, you could always count on him to like produce a massive, you know, touch finder, release the pressure, and he just didn't really get the opportunity. I thought he got one turnover penalty right at the start of the game that then led to the Jones try, but maybe, as you said, I think the fact he's not played like since December, maybe just this like will sort him out and set him up nicely for the rest of the tournament, because they're not going to change that position at all.
I suppose his one big moment was that poor pass that he made when we were sort of through in behind and put it. Was it Kyle Steyn that went behind?
Yeah, yeah.
That was a bit of a shame. It was good, really good opportunity after some good work. But as I say, I think you're right. I think, you know, it's rustiness, and you know how eager he'll be to, you know, particularly back at Murrayfield. What do you think of this iteration of his haircut, by the way? He was really blonde. I kept mistaking him for like Doohan a couple of times because it's so blonde.
I'm still not sure about it. I don't think it looks that good. But maybe it's. I mean, what did he have before? Just kind of like quite shan, spiky hair. Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's just the way to go.
Do you know what I like best? shaven hog, you know, where it was like kind of similar to Finn now, where it's just like that, you know, it's like a number one, just like, oh, he did it for the World Cup, didn't he?
Oh, he looked, yeah, but he looked hanging.
I think
it was when he was losing his hair as well, and he hadn't gone down the hair plugs route, and it made him look a lot older than he was.
Nah, I liked it.
I liked it.
He looked really hard as well.
And Alan, before we do Doohan, your boy Kyle Steyn justified his selection?
100%. I think in defence, where I was a little bit worried, I thought he was pretty strong. You know, he had a couple of tackles on Hassel Collins that he had to make, and he made them. He had one really difficult one-on-one with Marcus Smith, who, you know, one-on-one is like a pretty tough task. And he managed to get him, right? And that was quite near the end of the game at like a super pivotal moment. If Marcus Smith made a break, really could have changed the whole dynamic of the match. And ultimately, for both the break where Hogg ended up passing to him and he dropped, and for that final try, you know, he does manage to beat people, right? He makes additional yards because he is very good at stepping and kind of riding through those tackles. He's not got sort of the same pace and power as Doohan, but he does it on such a consistent basis.
We can't be far away from another trotting out of the article about his dad being Nelson Mandela's bodyguard either.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
And look, but I was going to say, when Darcy's fit, Darcy starts, right?
Yeah.
But ultimately, Kyle Steyn, even against a France or an Ireland, I think comes in and, you know, he can do a super, super solid job. I will say, we were saying this the other day, if it is, because it was Steyn that passed to Doohan, not that it really matters, but if Steyn was the one who passed to Doohan, he literally caught it and passed it immediately to Doohan to score that individual try. And if that's Darcy, I don't think that goes. Just because ultimately Darcy's instinct is to run every time, and that's not what he should do that. But no, just thought, you know, ultimately interesting kind of like what these different scenarios can sort of play out.
I thought Steyn as well. The other thing was his chase from the restarts was like a really good bit of his game, and he actually won us. Like, I think Russell's restarts were actually pretty bang on the money. It's one bit of the game we didn't talk about. And Steyn's just like desire to get to those balls, I think he claimed a few and at least put the England pack under pressure. So I thought he put in like a bit of a Sean Maitland-esque performance, actually, which is maybe not exactly what you'd expect, but fair play to him. He's really good. Yeah, exactly. Like, that's what we were wanting, really, in that position.
Everyone seems to love him. He just seems to get on well, and everyone is just a good vibes guy in like the 23.
No, I get that. And maybe the first game in history where we won the restart battle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Certainly in the history of this podcast.
Yeah.
Should we do a bit of Doohan? Matt, he's pretty fucking good at rugby, isn't he?
He's quite sweet.
Quite happy. He got that early injury in his career and moved from Montpellier to Edinburgh for like a grand just to get some game time.
That's the thing.
It's worked out really well for us. Great sliding doors moment.
Yeah. Obviously, I've like watched the video so many times today and got me thinking, like, do you think when he was playing in South Africa or even when he went to Montpellier, he like ever did anything like that? Or do you think sort of he was like a big, you know, brute who was a solid player, but people were like, you know, there's quite a lot of people who are pretty big from South Africa, because it just feels as if maybe he's developed that, or I don't know, but it's just like hardly anyone can do that in world rugby.
The fact that, because I guess the more interesting thing as well is that the fact that he even left South Africa, and I'm never quite sure exactly. I'm sure he obviously had quite a lot of injuries, but I've seen a few people say, you know, schoolboy rugby in South Africa is a pretty high standard. And I've seen a few people in that sort of circle say that he was like the best schoolboy player a lot of people have ever seen. I mean, you look at some of the photos of him in like sixth year at school, and he's like the same size as he is now. And supposedly he just scored like an unbelievable amount of tries. He would like run through teams on like on a consistent basis. And I'm never quite clear how South Africa lost someone like that. and again, I'm sure it's sort of injuries, and I'm sure, you know, it's a pretty tough like meat grinder when you're sort of 2021 trying to get through the sort of South African system. But yeah, it's kind of the two, both South Africa and then Montpellier seem to not see something which is so blindingly obvious now. And yeah, that first try, do we think, I think it's definitely the best individual try in Calcutta Cup history. I think it's the best individual try in Scottish Six Nations history. And I think it's arguably, I can't think of another one, the best individual try in Six Nations history.
I'd like to make the case, I think it's worth a discussion, Sam Johnson's try to either put us in front or level us in the great comeback game is...
Nah, maybe a better try, but that...
When Sam Johnson's coming into the 22, there's like four people around him.
Nah, that is the combo of the Finn no look with Johnson in the line. Yeah. And, you know, potentially for the moment, because of the moment in time and kind of the context of what's happening, it's like maybe the best try of all time in Scotland and the Six Nations.
Yeah.
But in terms of that full end-to-end, what Doohan did versus what Sam Johnson did, Doohan's got to be...
55 meters as well. Like, it's just absolutely wild. And I think maybe with the exception of Marchant, who was probably never going to get to him, players are close to him, like Stewart and Van Portfleel and Alex Dombrandt are close to him and have like a reasonable chance of making the tackle and obviously don't complete it in the end.
I think even if Dombrandt goes low, Doohan's got enough momentum to get over the line.
Interesting. I think he might get him.
Do you think
he stopped just short. And I think it was floating around Twitter. There's like a really great angle of where he sort of steps Van Portfleet, and then while he's stepping, he actually has to switch hands with the ball to sort of like so he's able to hand off Dombrandt. And I kind of get it from Dombrandt, you know, if you think Van Portfleet's trying to go low and then you're trying to sort of go high, sort of over the top, but Doohan's clearly too quick and too strong. And the moment you sort of start trying to tackle him with arms one-on-one, he's just clearly got the biggest arm of all time.
Do you think, and given 500 opportunities, Alan, you could stop Doohan once from the Dombrandt position?
From the Dombrandt position, I think maybe 23 out of the 500.
23 out of the 500.
That's quite a lot.
Completely joke. Literally zero. There's zero chance of getting anywhere.
Could you maybe get at his ankle and just like luckily tip him over?
Or just do like Luke Carndicky and just go so low.
Yeah, just like head in between his feet.
100%. That's all you can do.
Yeah. Bloody hell. I'm glad he's on our team. I mean, his finish for the second was, you know, equally as good.
Going back to the first try, is there an argument that George Turner obstructed Owen Farrell? Or do you think he would just move his body slightly?
I thought that originally, but I think... Yeah. And I'm not saying he doesn't know what he's doing. There's a high chance...
He does, and it's really smart.
Yeah, but he does it in a way where it's absolutely... fine in terms of, as long as he's not, you know, shifting into, he just kind of stops, right? But no, I think
do you think we're looking at that through thistle tinted glasses, and like if it had been an England try,
I think if Owen Farrell had complained more, or the, like, I think
they might have gone upstairs.
I think if he genuinely thought that he'd been obstructed, he would have been in the referee's ear right away, but he wasn't. I don't think he was really.
Or do you think he would have been, but he was so distracted from Finn Russell getting up in his grill that he actually forgot to argue with the ref?
I mean, if that's how it's worked out, then, you know, I'm all for that shithousery.
It's great fun.
To be fair, to that point, Farrell, well, he put in that big tackle on Russell, which was a big hit, to be fair. And Farrell was looking to hit Russell all day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but then he also missed the tackle for Doohan's second try, which was once again like a class finish that like a lot of wingers would finish. Did manage to beat Farrell as well. Should always like back themselves beating Smith or whoever it is coming over. But to finish that was still, as I said, don't think that many people could do it.
Is it earlier on in the sequence of that last try as well, where Doohan sort of like his strength sort of keeps the ball in play when England are clearly trying to sort of move him out? Or is that?
Yeah, no, it is. I think it was Malins.
Yeah.
And like he managed to shrug him off, which was actually like really critical to that overall move.
Yeah, because it looked he was very, very close to the touchline at that stage.
Should we talk through the sort of final try, or at least even the final phase and the sort of components that made it up?
Yeah, I can do that. I can do that for sure. That's a good time.
Finn passes, and then you get sort of the Doohan just keeping him back. Actually, there was some quite nice work with Sione and Blair.
And Kinghorn, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you get
yeah.
those sort of three phases across. So you get sort of the Ferguson, you get sort of the missed pass to Dempsey, which where Dempsey really managed to sort of punch through that midfield.
Yeah.
And
that was interesting. If you look at that, like suddenly England, it looked as if they had someone in the sin bin because yeah. Dempsey gets through so easily, and then there's an advantage at that stage. Which probably allows, well, Finn Russell will probably chuck that pass anyway, but then it gives him, when Russell gets the ball and chucks it to Steyn, there's like 4-on-2, 4-on-3 coming over.
Yeah.
That maybe it's just the stage of the game, like England were absolutely blowing, but there were so many spaces at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And then also it was Ben Youngs who was sort of marking that wing. And clearly just doesn't look comfortable at all.
So slow. Yeah. He was like pointing at other people to make the tackle.
Gets gassed yeah. by Steyn, and then it's Tuipulotu who gets to the ball digs it out there.
George Horn's obviously running his like standard inside ball line, and just yeah. because yeah. of Steyn getting tackled, sort of gets overrun, arguably comes in from not even the side, but sort of like the England side of the ruck into the ruck. But you're right, Sione, quick as a flash, is in, and then actually every single pass in that sequence is almost near perfect.
Yeah. I this morning I was a huge advocate for the Richie Gray pass, and I remain a huge advocate for the Richie Gray pass, but I think the Fraser Brown pass is actually better overall and is more critical to the success of the try.
Yes. I actually think there's more skill involved in the Fraser Brown. Like the Richie Gray pass looks great, and it takes a lot of skill, but it's just sort of the classic kind of shuffle pass. And then but all of it's fantastic.
I actually disagree. I think the Brown pass is like a really like incredible pass that Finn Russell will be proud of. But I also think at the same time that now bear with me, any of us could have done that pass.
I don't know, man.
It was like a reasonably long spin pass. That
okay.
I think yeah. just purely isolate the skill.
Are you saying that the three of us couldn't have done the Richie Gray pass?
I think the Richie Gray pass is a harder skill because he's under so much pressure. And also at the yeah. end of the day, he's a second row.
Like, okay. Who's played 75 minutes.
Exactly. I mean, Fraser Brown's a hooker there.
He actually used to play scrum half at school. So
yeah.
But yeah, no, I get your point. But I think that transfer there's a greater chance of something going wrong in that transfer than the Fraser Brown pass.
Both
I'm splitting
banging.
Hairs. I'm splitting
argument.
Hairs. But
the two of Pilotti to Finn to Brown to Gray to Ferguson to Doohan. Like all of them have to come off. And it's quite rare that Scotland would do that, not least yeah. under pressure in the dying phases of a game to score the winning try.
No, but the fact that Matt Ferguson summed up his options, saw the big freak on his left, and it wasn't like traditionally, I think a coach would be like, oh, you've got to draw a man or commit a defender. But he was yeah. like, nah, this lad needs the ball right now. So I love that as well.
I think sort of thinking about that last sort of phase of play, I definitely think there was some sort of mandate if we're in that second half to play more out of the Scotland 22 or Scotland sort of kind of yeah. 10-meter line. Because there was multiple occasions leading up to that try, including the Steyn hog drop ball break, where Scotland did look to shuffle it wide and look to attack from inside the 22. And I think ultimately, you know, why I think more than anything Scotland deserved the win is in a sort of tight moment to be showing that level of ambition, you know, when you're down away at Twickenham against England, and kind of the fact that ultimately in a lot of those moments you can get turned over. And it can be a high risk play, but to execute it so well across those five phases, like there was none of those rucks where anyone looked isolated. There was none of those rucks where it looked like England were going to get the ball. Kind of that whole piece, both in terms of passing and kind of protection of the ball, just worked really well. And I was saying it's kind of that mix of ambition and then be able to execute at the end of a match with all the pressure, I just think is such a great thing to see from the Scotland side, right?
Do you think we've ever forensically analysed a single try in that much detail?
I'm trying to think.
I don't think
anyone could accuse us of forensically analysing anything.
It's very enjoyable. It's very enjoyable.
Maybe Maitland 2018. Maitland 2018. I feel that's like we did a deep dive long piece.
That's true. The Athletic, like 5,000 words in one try. I mean, we've sort of gone through the whole back line. We've talked about the scores and things like that. We've touched on a couple of forwards, namely George Turner, Richie Gray's performances. I mean, I think his name's come up in that discussion. Do you want to do a little bit on Matt Ferguson? And, you know, what I came across today is he's only 24. I think that we really do, we expect a huge amount from him. Matt, do you think he's sort of gradually becoming the sort of the international number eight that we've always wanted, and maybe we've been expecting too much too soon from him?
Yeah, that is wild. 24.
24.
That is wild. I thought he was a little bit older. I think it's a fair point that he's just come through the system so quickly. And it feels as if, you know, when he first played for Scotland and was sort of fighting it out with maybe Bradbury a little bit for that eight shirt, that he would kind of come in and out of games, do a few good things, but not be like super consistent. Whereas now it feels as if he's going to give you like a minimum seven and a half out of 10 performance. And I think that it's not just about like the carrying, which we know he can do. I think he's probably more of, maybe the fact he's been playing six for Glasgow this year, he's just like a far more well-rounded player than that. Like, puts in so much work in the loose and the tight. And I think like physically, he had the measure of a lot of that England pack. And it wasn't as if the carries he was making were sort of like, even like Dempsey-like, but it was all making a little bit of yards, always getting over the gain line, soaking in a couple of defenders. So this feels like it could be a bit of a breakout tournament for him if he keeps up this kind of form.
27 tackles from him in one game as well. It was absolutely insane. The rest of the back row, you know, Crosby was sort of, he's been incredible form for Edinburgh. We talked about it. Would you say it's difficult to sort of judge like how good a performance he had? It's unfair to call him quiet because he was doing huge amounts of tackling and work, but he didn't have a sort of standout moment in the loose or anything like that.
I think, I mean, in the moment post-match, I didn't think he had a particularly strong game. And then obviously saw some of the stats were sort of coming out, and then actually re-watched it this morning. And maybe not quiet, it's not the right word, but he did just kind of do a very good job of, especially kind of around the line out or where needed, making maybe not extremely dominant hits, but, you know, winning that kind of battle when he was making those tackles. And, you know, ultimately to do 20 tackles when it's sort of your first Six Nations match away at Twickenham, I don't think you can ask sort of too much more.
None missed as well.
None missed. And, you know, ultimately he was able to make himself like, you know, we weren't like making sort of loads of turnovers, but he was sort of making himself a nuisance at ruck time. I think he should be, you know, obviously super happy with his performance. And I think ultimately my sort of concerns about his ability to sort of step up were wrong.
Good. Maybe it was one of those, admit when you're wrong.
Yeah, maybe it was one of those games as well where he was just sort of tasked with, you know, tackling, rucking, doing the nuts and bolts rather than getting his hands on the ball. And I also think Scotland did make quite a lot of mistakes in that first sort of 50-60. So there wasn't actually that much chance with phase ball to carry. So I think, you know, he'll be like good for the experience. And I agree. I wasn't like sort of that noticeably impressed by him, but you look into the stats and did pretty well.
Should we talk about the bench?
Well, I mean, I think the only player we haven't spoken about is Richie, the captain.
Yes.
Which,
do you think he justified his selection?
And the props
in the end
as well.
Yeah, and the props. I think Richie did justify. He did justify his selection.
Yeah.
I think I actually thought he was. He's pretty good around the breakdown. Obviously, didn't make as many tackles, but was pretty abrasive both in attack and defence around the ruck. And and ultimately actually obviously got that turnover at the end to ultimately win the match, which is a great way to win a match, yeah. That turnover in your own 22. When, during the match, when watching it, I think if I was an England fan, I would have been a bit pissed off because the ref took quite a while to give, from when Richie got his hands on the ball to give him the pen, the ref took a good sort of 3 or 4 seconds before he pulled the whistle. And I thought he might give it as a pen for like not releasing or not being on his feet. Because actually from the angle on the screen, I think you could make a fair argument for that. But actually there was an angle from the other side where just because of the nature of the tackle, he got a little bit isolated and the sort of first action was Richie kind of released and then he was immediately on his feet and on the ball. So, you know, look, great moment. And as I said, you know, solid match and then a pretty sort of like standout moment to win the Calcutta Cup.
I thought he did the lifting of the trophy quite well. He did that sort of like, oh, and then everybody sort of in behind him, which was quite nice. I mean, you can bungle those trophy lift moments, but I thought he rose to the challenge on that.
Thoughts with Mr. Burnett from last week. I hope he's not getting too much kind of hate mail.
I think Mr. Burnett just follows the stats.
Follows the science, like, exactly.
Well, exactly, yeah. Facts don't care about your feelings. So we still would very much like to see the XL, but I don't think there's much chance of Jamie vacating this six jersey for the rest of the tournament. WP?
I was just going to say with Jamie, I thought sort of afterwards he was trying to be very like, they were clearly buzzing, right? Mm. But I think especially because of the 2 years ago and what happened with the Wales match afterwards, I felt there was very clear, like they were like, right, this is just first stage. There was like, this is the message we want to tell everyone. This is kind of, and it sounded like, you know, that's probably what they're saying in the huddle afterwards. Like, this is step one, which, you know, is a good thing, right? But it was clear, you were sort of this mix of everyone's clearly loving it, but trying to sort of be like super professional. And like, this is just the first stage in a journey towards the Grand Slam.
How much we got on the props? Other than the WP, his scrummaging was really, really good.
I thought that probably Genge and Sinclair were, at least in the loose, like England's almost prominent players. Like, yeah. They seemed to be carrying loads and being like first and second receiver a lot. So I think it was quite a contrast. I thought that Schoeman and Nell just like did their jobs in the tight really well. I think they were pretty good at scrum time without, just trying to see if they kind of gave it. Nell conceded 2 penalties, Schoeman 1. Which is about the same as the England team, so pretty even, which, given our worries about Xander not playing, is a pretty good outcome, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think Nell, at the end of the match, looked like a man who'd given everything and doesn't have another match left in his locker. I think that was the last fight.
But just in general,
I don't think he plays for Scotland ever again. I think he laid it on the line. He gave everything. He looked at it. The man was, after the match, the man was so broken. And it was like, I want it. It's just like, give everything you've got once.
The photo of him celebrating is great. He's so happy.
Yeah.
It is so good.
He turns 37 in 2 months.
Yeah, it's mental.
Love it. Like, one of the best sort of like, nationalization sort of converts we've had, like ones that he's done. He did the 3 years, right?
Yeah. He was the first project player?
Possibly. He got in just before the 15 World Cup. He became Scottish.
He was sort of a project player before project player was a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're real trailblazers, aren't we? There, so yeah.
But no, he's for Edinburgh and Scotland, just been an absolute great stalwart. He put in the shift that he needed to do.
I believe you can tell he's a man of quality and that he's sending his kids to Watson's as well. You know that. You can tell someone about a guy.
That photo of him like celebrating and just like the context of him having little kids as well, I really liked. He's just like old dad. He's like, yes, I'm
old
out.
Dad. Should we go into the bench?
Yeah.
What did you think? You know, we talked a bit about Kinghorn, the impact he made when he gets the opportunity to play 15. Matt, what do you think about George Horn when he came off? And I guess that mixture that we look at, sort of like White and White starting and then Horn overpriced. Do you think that's something that we'll probably see for the rest of the tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have said it before the Six Nations, but I thought he looked pretty good when he came on. Added like a bit of urgency, which we still needed, given we needed that final try. It's just like when you watch back that final try as well, like his speed to the breakdown is arguably, I don't think his pass is necessarily the best, but he gets to the breakdown. We've all heard the stories about his like aerobic fitness with his Bronco scores and stuff so quickly, which I thought made a big difference in those final minutes when clearly England were tiring. So I don't see any reason to change it, but it's a nice kind of selection issue to have, I suppose.
Thought him and Kinghorn, from a bass perspective, really added something. I thought Kinghorn was just looked so solid and sharp for that final sort of 15-20 minutes. And yeah, we'll see what you said about Horn. Just so great to have someone like that coming off the bench, especially when you're kind of slightly chasing a game, right? To sort of add a bit of pace in. And then in the forwards, thought specifically Johnny Gray and Dempsey added something. I thought Gray actually brought quite a lot, both kind of in his carrying and in defence. And then, yeah, we said it multiple times, but Dempsey's just such a horrible shithouse and just loves getting so up in people's grills. And just, again, with 20 minutes to go, just to bring that little bit extra edge, it's just such a great option to have.
I thought the front rows as well did a really good job. Like, I thought Batty and Bergen didn't let anyone down. And it was like almost the Fraser Brown performance that like we've all been hoping to see, or that we know he's fully capable of, in that like his first involvement in the game was coming on at the hour and then on, I think, Scotland's 5 meter line. And he had to chuck that ball over the top. Like, cool. That's like a pretty big ask when, as we talked about before, maybe his throwing's been a bit of an issue previously. And he's just one of those guys, I think his experience told, like, knows exactly what he's doing, and the skills in that final try as well. Kind of maybe thought his career was slightly over, but it's been good to see, especially given that Twickenham game when we got pumped back in whatever it was under Cotter.
Yeah.
And he was sin-binned, and that was sort of the start of the fall. So it was good to see sort of a bit of salvation in that regard.
Do you think Fraser Brown was a bit sour when Gilchrist made that over-the-top call? It's like, mate, come on.
Yes, like, let me chuck it to the front.
Let me warm just, in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, and I think just looking at the bench as a collective, I thought Anthony Watson actually looked quite good when he came on. But broadly, the Scotland bench definitely outperformed the England bench.
Yeah. And I maybe thought, looking at it on paper, that England had a bit of a stronger set of replacements. But no, I think they did really well.
For the Doohan try, you can see like Maku and Dan Cole charging back, and they're already absolutely fucked.
Yeah.
Looking ahead then, Scotland 6-point favourites. You hate to put it out there, but Scotland are 6-point favourites at the moment on Bet365 for Wales's trip to Murrayfield. We will come back to a preview in detail, but just looking at changes, if there are any on that from that starting 15, you've got to think it probably Xander Fagerson and Hamish Watson are the two big sort of ones that, if they're fit, typically start for Scotland. Matt, would you be bringing in one or both or neither?
I think I would probably play Watson.
Straight swap for Crosby?
Probably, yeah. Straight swap for Crosby. And I wonder if that means Crosby. Crosby's fairly versatile. It means he goes onto the bench. And then I would have said, like, definitely start Fagerson when he's fit. But I wonder if there's some question marks about the Welsh scrum. And I wonder if we just stick to how it is at the moment and then put Xander on the bench and just see if Nell can get the upper hand for the first, you know, 40, 50 minutes. So I don't think it's kind of a foregone conclusion, that one.
But Nell's going to retire, according to Alan.
Yeah, he might not be available.
He might rule himself out.
You think Nell's got one more show in him?
Alan, what about you?
Watson, Crosby, I'm pretty ambivalent too. I actually think Tooney will stick with Crosby, but I wouldn't mind either way. I think Xander should come in. just think around the park. He just brings so much. And then the only other one, again, I was wondering whether Johnny Gray would come in specifically for Gilchrist.
Yeah.
You know, clearly Johnny Gray's been coming back from injury, but, you know, I really did think that he looked really good with 20 minutes ago. But I think sort of putting actual sort of performances aside, I think, you know, Gilchrist is clearly very well thought of.
Mm.
And I think probably from the sounds of it, brings more than just his kind of like on-field performance, both in terms of like leading the set piece and then also just kind of supporting Richie with leading that team. So I don't think that'll happen, but that was the only other one that I was thinking potentially could be a potential change. Richie Gray, undroppable.
Yeah, it's mental.
Who would
mental.
Have thought that Richie Gray was
undroppable? Genuinely mental.
I know. I can't believe he's putting in a full 80 as well.
I'm interested in Johnny coming back in just for narrative purposes. I think there's great stuff when there's two brothers in the second row. I think that's just, yeah, I'm up for that.
No, agreed.
And Nicola Minch is right himself, but and yeah, I think it's much of a muchness, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, if it's Gray, if it's Gilchrist, you're like, okay, cool. They're both like super solid.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's an interesting one again when Doris comes back, right? I mean, not going to be back for the Wales game, but there was originally the chat was that he might be back for France. And
Doris again, for Richie.
Whether you bring, hello.
<I'm joking. laughs>
You know, cause Darge specifically against France, you know, that game was such a, I'm here on the international scene. And I think against France, you know, I'm going, when we're trying to go 3 from 3 against France, Darge just gives you something a bit different and gives you by far the best chance of coming out on top in the breakdown. But, you know.
I just think if we're two from two and going to France, I just don't know how much you're going to roll the dice there.
No. But Darge, you can stay. We're doing all right.
No, it's
like,
true.
Hey, guy that's come back from like knee reconstruction and hasn't played for 6 months.
That is
fancy
true.
It. I mean, Darge is an absolute like lunatic, so I imagine he would do amazingly well, but.
Just talking about Wales sort of more generally, I think Tom English in BBC Today said something like the last two losses to Cardiff are burned into the soul of all those who played and all those who watched.
All those who watched, certainly. It's in my soul, for sure.
Yeah.
I'd say 2 years ago was a worse...
What, when we were 17 points ahead at Murrayfield?
That was the worst loss.
That was horrific.
Yeah, that was a real... Like, but Scotland actually played quite well last year. What was the worst about that was Scotland. It was both crap to watch, but also Scotland played so badly. Whereas the year before, they played well, and then they just kind of like, you know,
a bit unlucky
at the end.
The trip to Cardiff last year was good because we were drinking cans with Finn on the train on the way back.
That was great.
Really good.
Another memory you've made without me.
It's amazing how these things all coalesce around. Like, you are the consistent knot there.
I was thinking if we can't beat Wales this weekend, I might actually be done. I don't know if I can do it anymore.
Should we put it on the line like they do in like WWE and be like, if we lose to Wales, the pod is shut.
It's a retirement match.
Yeah.
The SRU might throw the game. They want us gone that badly.
No rain, supposedly.
Oh, lovely.
Good. Well, it's good for the day out. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. No, it'd be
What's our route, Alan?
Bailey for a few soft beers I don't even know. What's the match before? Is it Ireland-France before?
Yeah.
Jeez Louise.
Does the Bailey have a TV?
Yeah.
A lot of quite small TVs.
But yeah, it's got really small TVs, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Water of Leith along.
I'm sure our fans will be surprised to think of us drinking in Stockbridge.
Yeah. then walk along the Water of Leith to Murrayfield. Absolutely delightful.
Such a good, what a day out. Lovely stuff.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, why not till 3?
Yeah.
Get to why not at 8 p.m. Just to reserve your place.
Exactly. If we're 2 from 2, we're going VIP.
In fingers.
Yeah, in fingers. Is there a VIP room?
If you ask, they'll make one for you.
If there is anybody who works at Fingers Piano Bar, please do get in touch, because we believe that we can bring you some serious business on Saturday night.
Yeah, and all we want is like guest pass and maybe
I just don't
like
want to stand in the queue
for WKDs. That's it.
Huge
That's our
per
offer.
Head.
Yeah, per head.
Yeah. One last one from me before we shoot off. Best meme of the weekend. I think Princess Anne content has been particularly good. I think I wasn't expecting it, but Princess Anne wearing like essentially a massive visor, those sunglasses or something else, was just something I really wasn't expecting, and I absolutely love it.
So stoic as well. Like zero celebration.
Yeah, I know.
So good.
It's been a great week. Great 48 hours. Just love the build up, the mat, and then the only thing better than the day when Scotland beat England is the day after, for just all like the analysis, blow up memes, etc. It's just been fantastic. I was like in the park with my daughter, just like ignoring quite dangerous play, just like doom scrolling through Twitter and Instagram, just loving everything.
So good. Well, we go again. Wales in 6 days' time, coming to Murrayfield. Scotland going for 2 from 2, Operation Grand Slam. We go again. We are still alive. Get on to our Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod, on Instagram, Thistle_Rugby_Pod, and you will get plenty of us this week. And then we will be back in just a matter of days to preview the Wales game. Looking forward to it. What a wonderful time of year. We will speak to you very soon. Cheers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.